Here are the stories that you need to know about today. The United States is signaling that it's about to bomb Iran again. It's pulling U.S. troops out of Qatar and other Middle East bases. So we are going to go live to Tehran. We're going to be talking to Professor Mohammad Mohrandi. Greenland's lawmakers and ministers are frightened. They're running scared. They're saying so. They called a news conference, and we're going to play this for you. And while the United States gets ready to invade two more countries, Europe's leaders find a new way to blame Russia and China. Of course, their attacks and their hatred for those two countries is seemingly never ending. This is the Sanchez effect. Let's do it. Hello again, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez, and welcome to The Effect once again. There's a major story that I guess I missed it. Maybe you missed it, too. Look, I try my best to try and keep up with world events, but I guess I really just missed this one. Now, here it is. Apparently, Russia's trying to take over Greenland. Did you know that? Oh, and China is apparently trying to take over Greenland, too. I didn't know that. So here's what I thought the real story was.
If we don't take Greenland, Russia or China will. And I'm not letting that happen. One way or the other, we're going to have Greenland.
President Donald Trump wants to own Greenland, and the White House hasn't ruled taking the island by force.
It's a pretty simple story. Greenland is way up there. It looks to be a part of Canada and likely closer to Sweden and Norway than it is to the U.S., but it's actually a territory of Denmark. So why does Trump want Greenland, right? Let's talk about this. Here's the real story. So Greenland has a lot of exploitable land, and as the polar ice caps continue to melt, it becomes more and more attractive. Who knows? Soon the Trump Corporation may even be able to put a golf course there. Don't laugh. But most importantly, Greenland holds some of the world's largest untapped deposits of rare earth elements, minerals with hard names to pronounce like neodymium and dysprosium that are crucial for making high-tech weaponry. It also holds much of the world's fresh water supply. That is why Greenland is attractive. And that's why Trump really wants it. Look, this is a forum that I'm about to show you right there. Look at that. That's a forum where lawmakers representing Greenland came to meet with NATO officials. And they're telling them how worried they are about losing their livelihood, about losing their land, right? And they say most people can't even sleep at night after hearing Mr. Trump's threats. And they want to know, what is Denmark going to do? What is NATO going to do to protect them?
I just want you to notice, and I'm sure you have noticed it because it's been all over the place, that the people of Greenland, it's 56,000 people, are scared stiff. They're stressed, and they're more than just worried. And I and my country and all the people in Greenland strongly believe that we are allies and that you are there to protect us. But please give us an indication of what can this alliance do if two countries within the alliance cannot agree. Thank you.
Yes, but I thank you so much for that very well put question. But you have to respect the fact that when there are discussions between allies, my role has to be to make sure we solve issues. And when it comes to the protection of the High North, that is my role. I can never comment on that. That's impossible in public.
I'm sorry, I can't comment on that. That's Mark Rutte. He's the head of NATO. You'd think he would understand the gravity of her question and say something like, yes. I also became concerned when I heard Trump threaten the country, threaten Greenland. And I'm going to do whatever I can to make sure that this doesn't happen, right? That's what a responsible representative of the people would say if he gave a crap about the people. But what does this guy Rutte say instead? What does he say? He says, sorry, I can't comment on that. I can't. It's too scary. I can't touch that. Really? Think about that. She says, I'm worried about being attacked. People taking our land. People taking our homes. And he says, sorry. Too scary. I don't even want to think about it. I can't touch it. I can't talk about that. WTF. That's crazy. So what does he talk about instead? Oh, my God. What a world we're living in. He talks about Russia and China and how he's going to protect the people of Greenland from the Russians and from the Chinese by adding more security to the North Seas or whatever the hell he calls it. Here it is.
What I'm doing and with the U.S. and Canada and all our allies in Europe is to make sure that we not only concentrate about Greenland, this is an issue about the High North, this is an issue about the Arctic territory. Let's not be naive. Even if there are not that many ships sailing at the moment, we know that with the sea lanes opening up in the High North in the Arctic, and this is not only true for Greenland, this is true for the whole Arctic area. It's not only Russia active there, it is increasingly also China being active there.
Being active there. They're not there now, but they might come sometime in the future. What the hell is he talking about? What does he even mean? And why is he talking about Russia and China to begin with? They have not threatened Greenland. Russia does not need Greenland for Arctic access. Russia has more Arctic access than any country in the world. Just pull out a map. Stop right now. Go to Google Earth, whatever the hell it's called. Look at a map. Russia's in the Arctic. Siberia, hello. What he's saying is complete bullcrap. It's just another typical false narrative to replace the truth. I mean, it's gotten to the point where European leaders like this guy, they've been doing this since the 90s. And Western media types, they don't even push back. You know who did push back? You know who did push back? That little old lady, I probably shouldn't say that, the MP, the member of parliament from Greenland, she pushes back. My sense is she knows that he's full of crap.
There are not one single Chinese or Russian ship around Greenland. Let that be stated as a fact.
There is not one single Russian or Chinese ship there. It is a fact. God. But you know, if there's something that I've noticed about the European elites, like this Ruta dude, right? You could throw in Ursula, what the hell's her name? Ursula von der Leyen, Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron, Friedrich Merz, and many of these others into this mix is facts don't matter to them. Facts do not matter to these people. They literally make stuff up just as they go along. Here, I'm going to give you an example. This is what I'm talking about. Faced with the threat from Trump that the U.S. will take over Greenland, what does the Prime Minister of the U.K. do? Look at this headline. This is Associated Press. Read it for yourself. He's in talks with NATO to, quote, counter Russia and China in the Arctic. Talk about like an ostrich putting his head in the sand, right? This shows two things about Starmer and Ruta and the rest of these weak-bellied bankers who run Europe. A, they're cowards, and B, they're liars. Look, I'll be honest with you. I hate to sound this way. I don't want to be demeaning. My parents taught me not to say mean things about people. But am I wrong? Tell me what you would call what these guys are doing. I mean, the U.S. threatens Greenland, and Starmer and NATO talk about the threat from Russia and China? Do they think we're stupid? I mean, are Europeans so brainwashed with lies about Russia and China, you could probably throw in Iran, that you could just lie to them about anything? And as long as you blame these countries, especially Russia, you know, they'll just buy it? The European economy is collapsing. Thanks, Russia. Thanks, China. You did this. It's raining outside. Oh, Russia, must be your fault. You too, China. I know you did this. The U.S. wants to take over Greenland. Russia's fault. China's fault. Look, I grew up in America, right? When I used to hear the Russians and the Chinese complain that they're always being scapegoated like this, I thought they were just paranoid, you know? Yeah, right, Chinese, Russians, you know, always being paranoid, saying, you know, they're scapegoated. They're not. They're not paranoid. It's real. I've seen it for myself. And if it doesn't stop, it's going to backfire on Europe in a very big way. Because both Russia and China are on the verge of saying, we've had enough. We've had enough. In fact, that response could come sooner than you think. By the way, there was another development on this story overnight. U.S. Vice President Vance and Secretary of State Rubio met with Greenland's top diplomats and foreign affairs minister. And then after the meeting, in what can only be described, and I watched it for you, as a rambling, stumbling, and nonsensical news conference held by these two people, that they looked like frightened hostage victims, these two people appeared and seemed stupidly convinced by the narrative that somehow this has nothing to do with Trump's threat and everything to do with security for Greenland. Again, not about Trump's threat. What threat? Look, I got to tell you, it's a little hard. It's a little hard to watch and even more difficult to understand. But here you go.
The whole idea and the reason why we asked for this meeting was to turn public debate in a very, you know, black and white kind of setting into a discussion where there's room for nuances. And therefore, I'm pleased, even though we do not agree whether this is doable, while we at the same time should respect Danish, the kingdom's red lines, at least it is productive to start discussions at a high level. And then we have to see whether we will be successful or not.
What? What the hell is he talking about? Can you imagine if you lived in Greenland? You live in Greenland. And somebody's threatening you, and you're looking for some kind of reassurance from your leaders, and you hear that? Are you reassured? Good luck. Good luck. By the way, is there anybody left in Europe these days with a spine? Speaking of spineless drivel, I want you to hear something from Fox News. I used to work there. The pro-Trump, but more importantly, the pro-war network in the U.S. And what it says about these protests in Iran, how it characterizes the protests in Iran while there are actually worse protests taking place in the United States. Again, this is a false narrative.
Bring in Michael Allen, former National Security Council senior director. So there's all of that. Plus, in the New York Times, I'm reading this from a state broadcaster saying that I have never seen images like these before in my life, saying it was the worst kind of crackdown that he had ever seen.
If she looks a little dumb and unprepared for you, let me tell you why. She's a talking head. She's not a journalist. She doesn't know anything about television news. She's a former U.S. presidential spokesperson who then moves and becomes a journalist in America. Yes, that's what journalism in America has become. She's kind of pretending to be a journalist, talking about the protests in Iran. The worst crackdown of protesters ever? Like the worst ever anywhere in the world? Is that true? Is that a fair characterization? Her guest, by the way, and I'm not saying there weren't protests in Iran. There were, obviously. Her guest is a pro-war globalist, and he's a neocon. Not only does he agree with her, he goes even further. His response is probably not going to surprise you. Watch.
These are incredibly difficult massacres that are going on. The people of Iran are being struck down. The regime has its back against the wall. And I think they are really prosecuting everybody to the maximum. And I think this puts President Trump's pledges to do something front and center. I think what they're doing is trying to figure out what would be the target set. Would it be instruments of Iranian repression, like the police or the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps?
Do you know how many protests I covered in the United States? I was a journalist in the United States, and I was the guy sent to cover these things. Los Angeles, Liberty City, Brownsville, Chicago. I mean, I was wearing full body gear. I watched bullets fly by. I watched friends of mine get shot and killed. I watched riots that lasted for 3 weeks, right? In Miami, the day before the Super Bowl, as a matter of fact. Much worse than this. Much worse than this. Could you imagine if all of a sudden some country somewhere like China or Russia or Iran would have said, to protect the people of Miami, we're now going to bomb the United States because there's riots in Miami. There's protests in Miami. The people are angry at the government. Just think about that for a moment. I mean, you know, change positions, if you will. But there you go. There are protests in Iran. So the United States now has to go in and attack, bomb Iran to fix the problem, I guess, you know. It's really just a matter of, as you heard this dude say, who are they going to target? How many bombs are they going to drop, right? On what institutions are they going to drop them? And whatever the reaction is, it's apparently about to happen soon, because we're learning just today that the United States is moving troops out of harm's way, U.S. troops out of harm's way in, like, Qatar and other bases in the Middle East in case the Iranians respond. Crazy times. There's a lot of things to discuss here. And there is a perfect guest to break this down with who's good enough to join me right now. He is Professor Mohammad Marandi, joining us from Tehran University. Professor, thank you so much for being with us, sir.
Hi, Rick. Thank you so much for inviting me.
So I guess you and I need to break down what's actually happened, because there is this report you just saw on Fox News that says that these are the worst government crackdown in the history of mankind. There has never been anything like it. I watched you last night being insulted by some news channel, 410, I don't know, some number, some lady screaming at you and calling you names. And she said that the government of Iran has killed millions and millions of people. Is that true?
Well, as you know, it's all nonsense. What happened in Iran, to be as brief as possible, is that the United States, a couple weeks ago, they manipulated the currency through neighboring countries. And there was a significant fall in the Iranian currency, 30 to 40%. And as a result, you had a couple of thousand, I don't know exactly how many, shopkeepers and business people in Tehran protesting. And I think there were also protests in a couple of other cities, probably the same size or smaller. And there are no arrests. There was no police harassment. The government said your protest is valid, your concerns are valid, because a sharp drop in the riyal is dangerous for business people. They can go bankrupt. Mm-hmm. They sell their goods and then they don't have money to buy new goods. So nothing happened. And then we had the infiltration of rioters who were very well trained, and the violence began. These people, over the past, until Friday, mm-hmm. they killed between 300 to 400 policemen, roughly 100 policemen. My numbers may not be precise. Volunteers, Basij, who were guarding the streets, and other volunteers, and also riot officers during a 3-day period. And
we've got some video of this as you talk about it, so we're going to put up some video so people can see some of the protests that took place. Go ahead.
And I've put up a lot of videos over the past few days as well. on my Twitter account because I've been removed from Facebook and Instagram. So I have Twitter. So the rioters are one thing and the terrorists, the protesters are a different thing. No one shot protesters. There are no protests. There were no protesters walking down the street, chanting slogans, being gunned down. And there's a lot of footage about protesters attacking police stations.
We're watching it. We just watched a police officer get shot and killed. Go back to the beginning there. Go back to the beginning there, if you would, Gene. Start this video from zero. Look at the first video that we just showed. There's a police officer walking down the middle of the street. There he is. See him right there? That's a police officer wearing, you know, is that, there he is. And boom, and he goes down. That's a police officer getting shot. Just so you know.
So if this, yeah, so like, look at what happened in the United States a few days ago. A young woman, white, blonde, she's turning to her right.
No.
Then she gets shot in the face. The debate in the United States is whether she was turning to the right enough or whether she was not turning right enough and she was moving towards the police officer, thus making his killing of her acceptable. Mm-hmm. The U.S. president says, I support him. So in the United States, a police officer can shoot someone in the face sitting in a car. But in Iran, when these rioters and these terrorists are gunning down police officers, attacking police stations, destroying tens of fire engines, tens of public buses, many ambulances, they burned down a clinic and a young nurse inside, she was burned alive. She couldn't get out. She kept going upstairs, but the fire kept going up, and she burned to death. They burned two young men in a mosque. They surrounded them and kept throwing Molotov cocktails, burned them alive. So this is what they were doing. They were shooting ordinary people. And then Western media says these are peaceful protesters. The Israelis beg to differ. Mossad put out a statement in Persian saying that we're on the streets in Tehran.
And the Jerusalem Post, and the Jerusalem Post essentially wrote a story saying that the Mossad is inside. They didn't use the word infiltrate, but it seems like that's what they were implying. And the former CIA director of the United States also posted, Happy New Year to the Mossad and the protesters in Iran working together. I mean...
And then we saw Channel 14 of Israel say just a couple of nights ago that weapons were brought in by a foreign country, which I wonder who that is, and they were able to kill hundreds of Iranian officers and police. And so the Israelis are taking credit for it or bragging about it. And Western media is pretending that the Israelis are saying nothing.
Why would they do that? Why? I don't. By the way, I have two questions for you so far from what you've said. A, you said there were protests, and you understand why the people were protesting, and you say you and others in the government or people in the government say those people haven't agreed with them. They have a right to be angry. They have a right to protest, so they were left alone. But then infiltrators. And instigators came in and joined those protests. My question is, who are those people? How did they get into the country? How do these infiltrators enter Iran? And what does that say about your own security?
Well, one of Iran's problems is that we live in a neighborhood that the Americans have destroyed. They've invaded Iraq. They supported Saddam Hussein for many years, and then they destroyed Saddam Hussein in Iraq subsequently. They carried out a proxy war with the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. And of course, they used Pakistan to destroy Afghanistan. So Pakistan is a mess. Afghanistan is a mess. Northern Iraq in particular is a mess, very much influenced by the United States and the Israelis. So we have, Iran, as you know, is a very big country. We have 15 neighbors. Mm-hmm. And a lot of our borders are not well protected on the other side, if protected at all. And in many cases, we have Western agencies active on the other side of the border. And in addition to that, many of these people were trained inside Iran. They were cultivated through social media. They're paid through Bitcoin and other such means. Huh. And they're given operations to carry out. And they're different groups, but they were all coordinated from abroad. And the interesting thing, Rick, is that when the Iranian government pulled the plug on when the riots were really bad, mm-hmm. and the killing and the shooting and the murders were really, really bad. They were smashing people in the head. They were using stones and crushing people's heads. They cut off people's heads, just like ISIS. Mm-hmm. So when the government cut off the internet, within 24 hours, the whole thing collapsed.
Huh.
And it went quiet. Why? Because it was not spontaneous, contrary to what the West is saying.
In other words, they weren't getting mandates.
They were organized from abroad.
Once they stopped
getting organized from abroad.
Once they stopped getting information, they stopped rioting.
Exactly. Hmm. And these groups are not even together. They hate each other, many of them. But since they're coordinated from abroad, they were able to coordinate with one another. But when that stopped, it ended.
What?
And now, ever since Saturday, it's been quiet.
Why would my other question was when I heard you say that was it came to my own mind. Israel's usually pretty sneaky about the stuff they do. Why would they be taking credit for it? Why would they be admitting to it? Why would they let the Jerusalem Post, which is not a bad newspaper, report these things? Why would Pompeo, who works for the Israeli government, go out and post something like this unless Bibi told him to, or Bibi knew he was going to do something like this? Why are they doing this?
There are a couple of things that come to mind. One is that the whole culture of murder and slaughter and aggression and invasion has changed. The language of politics has changed. Trump says Venezuelan oil is mine. You know, he bombs and kills people in the Mediterranean and says they were drug dealers.
Yeah.
He goes and kidnaps a foreign leader. He can do it. He'll do it.
Hmm.
Israelis, ever since Gaza, ever since the genocide in Gaza, killing people, invading countries, bombing countries have become ordinary. The Israeli regime, when they carried out their blitzkrieg attack against Iran a few months ago, we then later learned that Trump was behind it. And as Iran and the United States were negotiating, Trump was secretly conspiring with Netanyahu to carry out the attack.
Hmm.
So we're living in a brave new world. It's a very different situation from before. The Israelis want to intimidate, I suppose, the Iranians or show their strength and power. But the interesting thing is that this Western media is silent, and the pundits, the so-called Iran experts, a lot of these are actually people who were born in Iran or who have Iranian parents, they don't know much about Iran because Iran experts in the United States don't travel to Iran. Sort of like many of the Cubans in Miami.
Yeah.
But who've never been to Cuba.
I can tell you stories. I can tell you stories.
I know. I can imagine. So these people go on, are criticizing the Israelis. These Iran experts in the United States are criticizing and saying, why are you destroying our narrative? Yeah. Why are you ruining our narrative of peaceful protests?
Mm.
This is the level of dishonesty among American elites, the media, where the Israelis are taking credit for it. The evidence shows it. The people are police. We had a funeral of 100 police officers and volunteers and a few ordinary people who were murdered by these people. Yesterday, we had a mass funeral in Tehran. I will tweet it later today, images of it. Massive funeral, 100 people, police officers, volunteers. And then they insist that these are peaceful. The Israelis take credit for it. The Iranians are showing images of it. And they say, and then they go take it even a step further. On Monday, we had massive rallies across the country against the rioters and the terrorists. Millions in Tehran.
Pro-government.
Pro-constitution, pro-state, pro-state institutions, anti-rioters. And then Musk and people in the United States are trying to were trying to say that these are AI. Now, you had Al Jazeera there, you had RT there, you had CCTV there, you had CGTN there.
We ran the pictures. I saw them. It was not AI. Now, those people were all forced to be there. You and your government made sure that those people went out on the streets, and you told them that they would die if they didn't go, right? They'd be killed.
Yeah, like 2.3 to 3 million people in Tehran. How do you force all those people to go to the street? How do you count them? How do you know who's there and who's not? It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But they don't want the truth to come out. They don't want people in the West to know that the state in Iran has a high degree of legitimacy. The state, the people in Iran are opposed to these terrorist attacks that the West is helping the Israelis carry out in Iran. People, if the West cares about Iranians, if they had any sense of morality, these pundits, these analysts, they would say, end the sanctions. Stop targeting women and children.
Yeah.
Stop making ordinary people suffer. But they don't have a sense of morality. They pretend that they're moral, but their whole narrative is based on fiction.
So
the only people that they're fooling is a segment of naive people in Western society.
Is this a color revolution? Because it smells like one.
I think it's sort of like a combination. It was a combination of the two because they were hoping that, I guess, that they could make this look as like it's protests.
Mm-hmm.
And the Western media was saying that. But when they started killing people, the protesters left. And the only people on the streets when the rioters were out were young people in the neighborhood coming to watch. And often they'd start shooting at the police from among these crowds. And in some cases, some of the people who were killed in these crowds were stabbed to death or gunned down with pistols from close range. In other words, not only were they shooting the police, in some instances it seems that they were killing people just for the sake of killing people. But the evidence is there. The footage is there. And the admissions of the Israelis are there. And as you pointed out, Pompeo even bragged about it. But the West closes its eyes and stops listening and repeats a narrative.
Yeah.
Why is that narrative being repeated? Because they want to push for war. Whether it's the fake progressive AOC or Levin, both of them are saying the same thing.
Yeah.
We have to help the people of Iran.
Just like, did you hear my, I don't know if you got a chance to listen to my comments before I introduced you, but the UK and NATO are now, talk about false narratives, trying to convince the people of the world that it's actually Russia and China who are threatening to take over Greenland. I'm not making that up. That's actually the story going around in the Western media today. Isn't that crazy?
It's insane. It's all, but what isn't insane nowadays in the West?
Wow. So let's do this.
They you know what's the most disgraceful of all?
What?
It's these people who pretend that they're anti-war, but they don't want to stray from the narrative. They say, yes, Maduro is a horrible man. He's evil. I agree, but we shouldn't attack the country. It will only make things worse. No, your government is evil for sanctioning his country. Your government is evil for threatening to attack the country and killing people on the high seas. Your country is evil for threatening to kill him and ultimately kidnap him. They don't do that.
Yeah.
Or when it comes to Iran, you know, some of them say, well, we're against striking Iran. You're against striking Iran. They're evil, but we're against. What do you mean you're against striking Iran? You should be attacking the U.S. government and those who are calling for attacks, saying you're barbarians, you're monsters. You've already launched a war, a 12-day war with the Israelis, murdering over 1,000 Iranians. You've imposed sanctions on the country. And then you point at the Iranians and say, yes, they are bad, but... No, That's just as that cowardice is makes these people no better than any of the evil neocons in Washington.
Let's go from the reaction now, which you've handled very well and represented your point of view very well, as you often do. And let's talk now about the news of the day, because I was actually expecting that there was a possibility you would not be able to join me today, because the expectation was that Iran would be bombed at some point today, given the urgency with which the United States was removing troops from some of its bases in the Middle East. It looks, my read, like the situation has softened somewhat for some reason. It now looks to me like the United States is not going to be doing it, at least not in the immediate. So do you expect that at some point your country will be attacked again by the United States?
It's difficult to say, Rick, and again, this is something that you would know better than I, but Trump is a person who no one can predict. He flip-flops all the time. I mean, when he came to power, he was going to end the war in Ukraine. He had a mandate. He had popular support. He didn't do it. Then he met Putin, President Putin in Alaska. Nothing came out of it. He flipped and flipped again. And the same is true in his trade war and with Iran. He changes sometimes by the hour. So there's no way that Iran could trust him. And there's no way that we can really negotiate with such a person who may sign something today and tear it up tomorrow. So what Iran is doing is they are assuming the worst, and they are prepared for war. And if the United States strikes, I think it's going to lead to a global economic collapse because
he says I'm only going to stop you because you said something that made me think of a very important question. Mr. Trump just said within the last 48 hours that Iran has reached out to him and they're willing to sit down and work something out or cry uncle or give up. I don't know. I can't. But he's putting out indications that Iran is reaching out to him to seemingly an apologetic tone. Is that true?
No. I mean, it reminds me of what happened in Yemen. He said that he's going to destroy Ansarullah and the Houthis and the Yemeni government. And after a month, he said they capitulated and they want to end this. And he stopped and he walked away. But the fact was that the Yemenis did not capitulate. They did not give any concessions. He lost, and he had to back off. In the case of Iran, the Iranians have said many, many times, and they continue to say it, that we are willing to negotiate, but the United States has to put aside any the preconditions that they've stated. Iran is not going to accept giving up any of its sovereignty or its ability to defend itself or its peaceful nuclear program. That's not going to happen. So if the United States continues to put out these crazy preconditions, then we can't negotiate. But if the United States puts them aside and says, let's talk, then that would be a different situation altogether. But even when we were talking with Americans last time around, we later found out that as Iran was negotiating, Trump was secretly conspiring with Netanyahu to carry out a blitzkrieg attack on Iran.
You have in your country a massive army, I think something like 900,000 strong. That's a pretty large standing army. You also have some of the most potent long-range missiles of any country in the world. And some have argued that you used them very effectively in your last go-around with Israel, and it was actually them who cried uncle as a result. How do you feel about the capability of your government should it come to a situation where you have to either withstand or fight back and defeat Israel as a nation, which most people would think are the ones who are truly responsible for any attack on you?
Oh, without a doubt. This whole conspiracy, Rick, the currency manipulation, the riots, the murders, and now the push for war, without a doubt, it's the Zionist lobby. It is the Israeli firsters in the United States who are behind this. Hmm. They want to push for war. They don't care about American interests or European interests or if the global economy collapses, because their interests are Israel, not the United States. We have to keep in mind that, as you pointed out, Iran's missile capabilities ultimately forced the Israelis to seek for a ceasefire. They were in deep trouble. Steve Bannon said so a day after the halt in hostilities. But one thing that Americans and people across the world should recognize is that Iran's military defense capabilities are directed towards the United States, not the Israeli regime. What the Iranians have to strike Israel is just a small fraction of its capabilities. Iran's real capabilities are directed towards the Persian Gulf, towards U.S. bases, towards the Indian Ocean. Why? Because since before 9/11, but especially after 9/11, the United States surrounded Iran and constantly said all options are on the table and threatened Iran. So Iran has been preparing short-range missiles of many underground bases, full of short-range missiles, medium-range missiles, and countless drones. And the Persian Gulf is not very wide. If anyone looks at the map, it's very easily accessible across the board for the Iranians, and it is very vulnerable. It's full of ships, it's full of oil tankers, it's full of facilities that if they are touched, the entire global economy will be massively affected.
I just asked ChatGPT the question. Here's what they say. If the Persian Gulf were shut down by missiles from Iran, roughly 20 to 35% of the world's seaborne crude oil supply passes through that Strait of Hormuz every day. A closure or blockade would dramatically disrupt the flow. Analysts say it would cause a spike that would sharply, potentially double or more, depending on duration. Estimates range from $100 and $150 a barrel more, and some extreme scenarios have projected even higher spikes. So what this is telling me, just on a cursory search, that it would create huge global economic problems for the world. Is Iran willing to do that if it has to protect itself?
Yes, if it's a war, we have to keep in mind that all of these countries, these tiny Arab countries, family dictatorships on the other side of the Persian Gulf have American bases. And thus they would all be complicit in the war. They would be a part of the US war effort. And it's not just the Persian Gulf, Rick. It's also Iraqi oil that is exported to the north. And it's also the Caucasus. So if there is war, there will be a global economic depression. And you know how bad the global economy is already. And when this comes, you know, on top of that, I think we'll be living in a very different world. The Iranians don't want this.
You said,
but the Israeli regime does.
You said recently, maybe it was you, correct me if I'm wrong. I think I follow you and I follow the story enough that I know who's quoted when, but someone in Iran recently said something to the effect that we're not Venezuela. Did you say that?
I don't recall. I may have. It's obviously true. Iran is not Venezuela. Iran is not Vietnam. Iran is not Venezuela and Vietnam and Iraq and Afghanistan combined. It is more than that. It is a very powerful country with very powerful friends across the region. In Iraq, the parliamentary elections that took place just a few weeks ago, Iran's allies won those elections. Their majority in parliament is much greater than it was before. So the United States is not in a strong position, especially now that it's at war with Russia by proxy. The CIA is still deeply involved. It's doing a trade war with China. Its troops, part of its navy is in the Caribbean. You have crises at home. And I don't see the United States being able to get into a conflict in Iran in any way or form with success.
Do you think that your newfound position in a multipolar world that didn't exist before, for example, Iran's place in BRICS, in other consortium of countries, where you're joined with countries like China and Russia and South Africa, for example, has helped your position where those who may want to threaten or attack you are thinking, well, you know, we better be careful because we go into there, they may be getting support from some of those other countries. Do you think that that is the case right now? And does it help? Does it help?
It definitely has changed the situation. Now, what help means is an open question. Iran purchases whatever it needs. It doesn't receive assistance. But the cooperation between Iran and China and Russia today is of a different nature than it was a few years ago. And the discontent towards the United States across the world is much greater than it was before. Hmm. And the stranglehold that the United States had over Iran is weakening. That's why Iran is now selling its oil despite U.S. sanctions. That is why Iran is expanding trade with different countries, including Russia and China, among others, despite U.S. sanctions. So 10, 15 years ago, Iran was much more isolated. China was still on the rise. Russia was significantly weaker comparative to what it is today. And the United States was much stronger than what it is now. And its allies and the United States, the NATO countries, were all much more consolidated and united than they are today. Now you just discussed Greenland. Both within the United States, there's division. Across NATO, there's division. Across the rest of the world, there's discontent towards the United States. All of this is helpful for the Iranian people and the Iranian position.
I think I should ask you this final question, just to clear the air a little bit on this, because I think a lot of people do watch Western reports, and they still don't quite understand what is the sentiment, what is the feel, what is in the hearts and minds of Iranians. Convince me, if you would, that the Iranian people back the Iranian government.
Well, this is really an interesting story, this whole rally, the rallies that we had on Monday. Mm-hmm. People can, you know, satellites can be used to see the numbers. There was rolling coverage throughout the day of the rallies in the different cities. And actually, the cities which were hit the hardest by the riots, their pro-constitution, pro-state, anti-riot rallies were larger than other cities. And the footage was there. And the crowds were crowds that you would not see in Western capitals. But the West wants to deny the existence of these rallies because they undermine their narratives. And you know, people, Rick, when in Tehran, I participated in that rally. First of all, it was so big. It took me 2 hours to get there and 2 hours to get back. And then imagine like a worker or someone from a low-income family. Many of them were from low-income families. Mm. They had to, you know, people who are struggling to, you know, pay the bills and get food on the table, they decide to spend half a day coming and going, probably spending money getting there, to make a political statement. We don't want these terrorists. We don't want these rioters who are destroying our city and who are just carrying out violence everywhere. But the West pretends that they didn't exist, even though it's foreign journalists were there, and there was a live coverage throughout the day on many different channels. And ultimately, Rick, if the Islamic Republic of Iran was not legitimate in the eyes of the Iranians, it would not have lasted before. during the 12-day blitzkrieg attack, the Americans thought Iran was a house of cards and it would collapse. They murdered senior commanders, they destroyed and killed so many people. But what happened? The country rallied and they defeated them. That shows that this country has a people that are united and a people that do not want the United States to intervene in its internal affairs and to destroy the lives of ordinary Iranians.
I just did a search on what Gallup says. Gallup says in 2025 that the support for the government in Iran is about 50-50. 50% of the people say they like the government. The other 50% say they don't like the government, which, by the way, is higher than what Donald Trump has right now. He's at 40%.
But also one thing, the government is different from the state. The Pezeshkian administration, its popularity goes up and down.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean people are saying, let's overthrow the whole
political order. No. I'm not. Just because there's approval ratings doesn't mean you want to go on the streets and kill everybody.
Exactly.
It's an approval number. I mean, Xi and Putin have pretty remarkable approval numbers based on Western polling companies. Macron is at 18-19%. Starmer's at 12%. Merz is at 22%. So actually, you guys are...
The Americans should bomb these capitals based on the polling numbers.
You're such a smart ass. It's interesting when you look at it this way, and that's not to say, obviously, by any means of the stretch of the imagination, that any government is perfect, right? All governments are completely imperfect. All governments screw up. There's corruption in all governments. There's bad people in all governments, including Iran. But the idea that because there's issues in the government, another country has a right to go in and bomb, that's where it's a bridge too far. And I think that's your point.
Yeah, and that government does not want to bomb the country and kill people because they want to save people. You don't save people by killing people. And we know what the real agenda is. It is so that the Israeli regime can reign supreme in West Asia, North Africa.
I hope your wife and your family are doing well. I hope that you are doing well. And by the way, let me ask you that. How do you hold up? I mean, I see you on everywhere. You're working a lot of late hours. I know you. I heard you say the other day that because the internet is down, you can't use the internet in your home. So you got to drive who the hell knows how long to get to some studio so you could do an interview like this. That must be difficult. I mean, it must be a difficult time to live in a country where the world is looking to see their watches to see when you're going to get bombed. Are you frightened?
Yeah, I'm in the press TV building, and this is not exactly a studio, but they have internet here.
You got hit there before.
At home.
They got hit there before.
Yes, and this building was not hit, but during the 12-day war, when I was in this building doing interviews, because back then the internet was very slow too for security reasons, they hit the central building of press TV. And there was no condemnation from the West, of course, because Iranian reporters, they're worthless to Western journalists, mainstream Western journalists. But the point that I wanted to make is that, yes, I can't do it from home because at home, our internet is we can only use Iranian apps and Iranian websites.
Mm.
And I cannot access foreign websites. So I have to come here to speak with you. But, you know, people like yourself, people like me, we have a responsibility to tell the truth because we have to create awareness. And I have no doubt that the United States will fail, but war is horrible. And I've been to different countries where there was war. I've been to Venezuela numerous times, and my friends in Venezuela, I'm in constant contact with them. It's tragic, but unfortunately, this is an empire that is becoming increasingly dangerous because it is collapsing. And it's like a drowning person that's constantly lashing out to save itself.
Yeah.
And we are living in very dangerous times.
I know. You know the country. You live there. It's my country. I'm an American. And I love America. I love the promise of America. I love the institutions that were built in America. I love the Constitution of America. I love the American people. But You're right. There are people in America who are trying to hold on to something that they should let go of, and they've been doing so for way too many years, and they do cause a lot of harm. And let's hope that the good people and the good minds and the people who believe in something more powerful than all of us are the ones who win out, and this war does not happen, and your country is not bombed. Always good talking to you, Mo. Be good, and we'll talk again.
Thank you, Rick.
Take care.
See you soon. You too.
Now to the comments. Thousands of you reacted to the story I did, the show we did the other day, where I criticized the European leaders for freaking out about Greenland but never really giving a crap about other countries when they get attacked. Iraq, Syria, Belgrade, and so many others. And you guys loved my interview with Air Force Command Chief Master Sergeant Dennis Fritz. He was a character, strong-willed guy. Alexanderson says, as an 80-year-old man who has listened... No, sorry, I added man. 80-year-old who has listened to mainstream bullshit for most of my life, you are a breath of fresh air. Thank you. It's nice to hear you say that. Odard Patricia says, Macron is a liar. He just sold French agriculture to South America and drugs in the industry to India. This guy's a liar and a traitor wanting to throw Europe to die in wars, he says about Macron. Dr. Ron Jeremy says, great to see you back, Rick. How was Miami? In a word, warm. Vige Reddy says, clearly they have not heard of the wise saying from India. It's called the Dharma. And it says, if you save justice, then justice will save you. Nice. As usual, all the feedback is appreciated. I'm on YouTube. Check out Journalistically Speaking. Don't hesitate to speak your mind. Also, look for me on X. I go by Rick Sanchez TV. Actually, it's Ricardo Leon Sanchez. Kidding. Rick Sanchez TV. See you next time. We'll be looking for you.